Stand by. Transmitting sound. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
Hey, how you doing? Happy to have you on board this week as we celebrate three amazing women. First of all, media personality and animal advocate Nat Lozon drops by to talk about animal shelters and pet adoption. Then Beverly Hills fashion designer Tina O stops in to talk about her fashion line. And finally, you get to meet my amazing grandmother as she talks about her 65-year career as an organist in our local church. We also pay tribute to Leslie Nielsen, and we've got some killer remix music from Katy Perry. Lots to do. Let's go.
Capture your need for sound.
Well, I'm very excited to welcome you to this week's show. We have three amazingly talented women joining me as guests, including my good friend and colleague, Nat Lozon, who is here to talk about animal shelters as well as pet adoption. And I can't wait for you to hear about all the good advice that she has if you are thinking about adopting a pet. Also, we have designer, Beverly Hills designer Tina O joining us to talk about how she's taken her business online. And it's very cool. Wannawear by TinaO.com. Can't wait for you to hear her story. And also, you've met my mother, Mummy Alexander. Well, it's time for you to meet my grandma, Grandma Alexander. She has been an inspiration to me for as long as I've been alive. And I'm just so excited for you to meet her, especially because we're going to talk about her 65-plus year career as an organist in our local church. And it's a pretty fascinating ride that she's been on all these years. So I'm excited for you to meet Grandma Alexander. So that's coming up. I also want to give a shout out to the fact that we are now going to be broadcast on PCJ Media overseas. So a big shout out to Keith Perrin for bringing us on board. And we're very excited to be a part of PCJ Media as we are broadcast overseas. So as well as, you know, as we continue to be broadcast online here at KellyAlexanderShow.com. So very excited for you to listen to the show this week. And as we sort of march into, you know, full on holiday shopping season, I just wanted to remind you yet again, we had our good friend Solmaz McDaddy on the show a few weeks ago. And, you know, she was talking about holiday shopping and some tips that you need to sort of keep in your mind. And I just wanted to remind you once again that I know December is so crazy. We have all these commitments of work and office parties, you know, events with the family, and then, you know, trying to fit in Christmas shopping around that. It can all get very, very stressful. And sometimes you end up making, you know, sort of rash decisions that you regret in January when those January credit card bills come in. So I guess the main tip that Solmaz had was to sort of make sure you make a list. And, you know, don't sort of deviate from that because you have a budget and you need to follow it. And you don't want to be, you know, crying in your credit card bills again come January. So take it easy one step at a time and enjoy the holiday. And hopefully it won't be too rushed for you. Also, again, during this holiday season, very important, if you can head to your local shelter and donate some non-perishable goods wherever you are in the world. There's people in your community that need your help. So again, if you can do that, that would be much appreciated by them. And again, all of us here at the Kelly Alexander Show, as we are doing our part in Montreal to help support one of our local shelters, Sun Youth, the Sun Youth organization. So we're happy to do that. Can't wait for you to talk to you all about that once we do our live broadcast at Taz Basement here in Montreal in support of Sun Youth's Christmas Basket campaign. So enjoy the show, and you know, I can't wait for you to meet Grandma Alexander, Nat Lozon, and Tina O.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
For my next guest, abolishing puppy mills and enforcing animal cruelty laws has become a major driving force in her life. She loves dogs, loves animals, and wants to make sure they are being treated the way that they should. And because she's poured so much energy into advocating for animals, she is the perfect person to speak to about animal rights and our responsibility to these lovely little furry creatures. I should also mention this fantastic lady is a fellow radio announcer and colleague of mine, Nat Lozon. Welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Woohoo! I'm so happy to be here.
Yay. Well, first to start off, you are a media personality. You work in radio. You also write for print. You do voiceover work, and I don't even know what else you got going on, a lot.
I'm a solid gold dancer.
Exactly. That's on Sundays. But how, you know, did you get into advocacy for animals? It seems like a complete 180 from what you do for a day job.
That's funny. You know what? I just have always loved animals my entire life. I'm a few years ago, I had the opportunity to volunteer in the wake of a puppy mill seizure with the Montreal SPCA, and it sort of got me rolling with the whole, you know, let's put an end to puppy mills and let's make sure people don't buy from pet stores and do their research when it comes to getting a dog and all that kind of thing. And I love the fact that radio allows me to spread the word as well.
Now, I think a lot of us really have no idea what you end up finding in an animal shelter. What were your first sort of impressions when you walked in for the first time?
Well, in terms of the puppy mill seizures, those dogs are typically in very bad shape. When I first went in, I really wanted to cry. But as you get going and as you get volunteering, all you want to do is help them. And they really are amazing dogs, but they come in horrible shape. They've got infections, they've got broken legs, they've got overgrown hair, overgrown nails, you name it. So that was, it's horrifying, but then it makes you want to change things. But for a person to go into a regular shelter like the Montreal SPCA now, not necessarily the puppy mill dogs. The dogs are amazing. They're clean and they're healthy and they've been spayed or neutered, defleed, all that kind of thing, and are ready and waiting to go into a new home. So all the animals that you see when you walk in are good to go.
And when the dogs, like you said, when they come from a puppy mill and then they go into the shelter, sort of how long, or is there a time frame, you know, how long it takes to get them from disaster to sort of being in good shape and being sort of in mental good shape?
It sort of depends on how bad they were to begin with. Some of them come in totally fine, or have no issues with people, have no issues with other dogs or other animals, and for them it's really an easy sort of transition. Others take a long time to obviously get socialized with people and that kind of thing. I don't know. I don't think there's really a time frame. I mean, some dogs carry issues that can run through their whole life, which is why it's very important if you adopt a puppy mill dog that if it has issues that you do research into how to help them overcome whatever it is. I, for instance, have a puppy mill dog and she was very under-socialized and afraid of people. So, you know, that's something that I've been working with her on consistently through, you know, the 7 years I've had her. So, but it does get better. With time and patience, everything gets better. So there's no specific limit. It's just it depends on the patience of the owner, and it depends on the dog, too.
When you did sort of start to get your hands dirty, as we'll call it, in the shelters.
Very dirty.
Yes, very dirty. What sort of... I guess it's not that I want to be negative now, but like, what sort of struck you the most about how we as sort of human beings have failed these guys, these little furry guys?
Oh, how long do you have?
Uh-oh.
I mean, really, it would rip your heart into. It would rip your heart out, stomp all over it, and light it on fire. It's really bad. I mean, the biggest thing that bothers me is that how can anyone, as a human being with any iota of compassion, treat another living creature that you know feels things and has emotions and can feel pain? How could you treat it like it's just an object, like it's a nothing? I don't know. I mean, I hate animal abuse. I hate any kind of abuse. But to just pick on such an innocent creature, I think, is the very depth of inhumanity. That to just let it go without giving it the basic food, water, nutrition, medical, that kind of thing is horrific, I think.
Joining us on the show today is media personality and animal advocate Nat Lauzon. Again, check her out, www.montrealdogblog.com. Nat, when the animals actually do come to the shelter for the first time, what are some of the services that a shelter provides to actually turn things around for the animal to make them better?
Well, first of all, a shelter works very, very hard in matching a dog with the proper owner. Not anyone can just walk in and say, hey, I want this dog, I'm going to take it home. What, I'm rescuing an animal, aren't you going to let me take it? Well, no, not necessarily. Shelters put the care and welfare of the animal at number one, and you are going to be interviewed to see if you're the proper home. I mean, you need to match an animal to their owner. You have to match the lifestyle and personality. For instance, if you're not an active person, you're not going to want to get a Husky or a German Shepherd. Those are working breeds, and they're going to drive you bananas, you know? So, you know, if you have small children, you're not going to want a small, little, delicate Chihuahua, or, you know, stuff like that. But, yeah, before a dog goes to its owner, first of all, the owner is strictly interviewed, and the dog, of course, gets all the medical care that it needs before going out, especially the spay and neuter aspect.
How long, you know, I guess on average, is an animal in the shelter before they're sort of, you know, adopted? Because do they need time to sort of just be in a safe place and sort of go with that for a bit before they're again transferred to somewhere else?
I think the whole MO of the shelters is to get them out as quickly as they can. Not to say that they would just, you know, send them out to anywhere, but to get them out as quickly as they can, only because a shelter is not, you know, as much as people who work there love the animals, a shelter is not an ultimate place for an animal to be. I mean, you know, a dog or cat, social creatures like this need to be in real homes. And you often don't get a good sense of who they are when they're in an environment that's a little bit stressful and a lot of other animals around and barking and that kind of thing. So they would try and, you know, sort of move them out as fast as they can. Unfortunately, you know, I know of dogs that have stayed for years in shelters. I know the SPCA Monterey has had dogs that live out there for years. It's a no-kill shelter, and you know, they're happy to keep them, but would rather see them in a home. So it really varies. There's no rhyme or reason. It really varies.
I hate to bring this up, but can you sort of dispel any thoughts about, you know, adopting a pet from a shelter? Because I think there's many of us listening right now that sort of could potentially view an animal from a shelter, and I hate to say it, but like as damaged goods because, you know?
Yeah, people, I've heard that a lot too, and let me tell you firsthand that some of the most amazingly well-balanced dogs I have ever met are rescue dogs. And people who own adoptive dogs will tell you that there's often something in that dog. They believe that the dog recognizes that it's in a safe place now. It appreciates having been adopted. I don't know if that's true, but definitely, no, they aren't used goods. A lot of dogs end up in shelters because of people saying, well, the baby, new baby's allergic, it's got to go. Well, it bit my neighbor, it's got to go. Well, it doesn't match the couch, it's got to go. It's too old, I don't want to take care of its medical bills, it's got to go. Or they buy them from pet stores, please don't ever buy a dog from a pet store. Or they buy from pet stores, then take the dog home and realize, hey, a puppy's a lot of work. Hey, this breed really isn't for me. The dog goes, you know, through some training issues, and it ends up in a shelter too. So all to say that shelter dogs are unbelievable, and they are not, I mean, and they all go through behavioral testing and that kind of thing, and they are not by any means damaged goods. The people who give them up are the damaged goods, as far as I'm concerned.
Good point. And I'm actually glad you brought up the fact that they're sort of, I guess, given the once over mentally, because that was another question I had is if they, you know, are there animals, Nat, that are ever sort of deemed, you know, sort of mentally unstable, as it were, that the trauma, whatever trauma they've gone to is too much and that it probably would be unsafe for them to go to home? Because, again, there might be people listening that go, you know, I have a new baby or a 2-year-old and I don't know if I want to bring something into my house that could go bat crazy.
Right. Yes, it does happen that an animal can have permanent behavioral issues as a result of someone having mistreated it for such a long period of time. Those animals are not the ones that you will see on the adoption floor. Any animal that you see that is up for adoption is an animal that has been tested behaviorally and is ready to go. May have some issues, but they wouldn't be like crazy issues. They'd be, you know, house training or maybe some, you know, issues over resource guarding its toys and whatever, that kind of thing. But those are all issues that are very workable and very easy to train an animal out of.
I think a lot of people, and you touched on it briefly, but I just sort of wanted to put it like right out there. I think a lot of people have good intentions, you know, and they want to adopt an animal. But what do you say to them with regards to the fact that they really need to be aware of what they're getting into? And I know that they're going to get sort of, you know, given the once over at the actual adoption shelter. But before they even get to that point, what do you tell these people?
If you want to adopt, do your research like crazy and don't under any means rush into it. Don't, you know, one day say, hey, I want to adopt, and, you know, the next week go out and try and adopt an animal. Really do a lot of research, read some books, find out what a breed would be good for your lifestyle. Older dogs are amazing to adopt because they've very oftentimes already undergone that very difficult puppy stage. They're house trained. Some know, you know, basic commands. They're calmer. Or maybe you'd want a, you know, a younger, more active dog, that kind of thing. But really, really do your research. Don't rush it. There will always, unfortunately, there will always be dogs ready for, available for adoption. And there will always be the breed that you want that, that will be available for adoption at some point. So do your research. Don't make an impulse adoption. And make sure you know that this is, you know, a 12 to 18 year commitment, and make that commitment to, you know, to really take care of this, this animal. It's in your hands, and you have to take care of the vet bills if it needs it, and food, shelter, and all the basic necessities of life.
And you said, Nat, like if they do go to an adoption or, you know, a shelter and they're going to adopt, they are interviewed profusely right before you actually get your hands on these little fellas?
Yeah, you go through an interview process, and some of them, some adoption places even will allow you to take the dog on a trial basis for about a period of 3 weeks or so, because 3 weeks is a pretty good, by that time a dog has sort of fallen into a pattern with a family, and you sort of get to know what his personality it is, because at the very beginning they can not be the same dog that they will eventually be. But anyways, yeah, you can sometimes take it on a trial basis. And another good thing to do too, if you're not sure, if you really want to make the commitment to actually owning a dog, is to foster an animal. So a lot of local rescue agencies have networks of fosters who bring the animal into their home and take care of it in a home environment before it goes to its permanent family.
Joining us on the show, media personality and animal advocate Nat Lauzon, www.montrealdogblog.com. Nat, tis the season to be thinking of gift giving as we approach the holiday season. And what do you say to people who are thinking of giving a pet as a gift?
Don't do it. You're so crazy. yeah, no, please, please. Like, I really would hope that we would know better by now, but it is never, ever, ever a good idea to give a pet as a Christmas gift or any other kind of gift. You've got to be 110% sure that the person receiving the animal actually wants it and has the time and energy to commit to a pet, especially puppies and kittens who are a whole lot of work at the outset. Holidays are a really hectic time of year. Your home can be very chaotic, and that's the worst time for an animal to go into your home. What they need when they come to your house is a few days of calm and peace and quiet to sort of settle in. So, you know, impulse buying is good for shoes, but not with a pet. You know, that animal can likely end up in a shelter before it's a year old, and that's why the shelters are so overflowing. So please don't buy an animal as a gift, and don't buy from pet stores. We have so many amazing pet rescues here in Montreal, and you can actually find them all at on the website at montrealdogblog.com.
And Nat, you mentioned the pet store thing, and I think a lot of us have no idea what's wrong with a pet store. Can you explain why we shouldn't be going to any of these places?
Yep. Many pet stores, I'm not going to say all, but many, especially in the province of Quebec, are their puppies and their kittens as well can come from places called puppy mills. I think we all by now know what a puppy mill is. When you see a cute little puppy in the pet store window, just keep in mind where its parents are from, and likely its mom and dad are languishing in a cage somewhere in a puppy mill, not given appropriate medical attention and not being socialized, kept basically as breeder animals to push out puppies so someone can make a buck off their back. So, yeah, the puppies are cute, but when you buy one, you are putting money right back into this horrific treatment of animals in horrible places called puppy mills. And also, I want to bring up a point here that on the website, you can actually find a letter to send to your member of the National Assembly and voice your dismay at the situation with puppy mills in Quebec.
Now, Nat, we have a lot of people that are listening in the States and other parts of the world. What do you say, like, to people that are you know, listening from abroad? Obviously, this problem is worldwide.
I would say yes. I actually know there's a great rescue in Montreal called 1111 Animal Rescue that just rescued a bunch of animals from Japan from a sort of hoarding puppy mill situation there. So those are now in Montreal. But yeah, I mean, animal cruelty and neglect is a worldwide issue. Unfortunately, Quebec has the very sad reputation of being the puppy mill capital of North America because our animal cruelty laws are very lax, and punishment is very lax for people who abuse animals. So we want to get that changed. But yeah, I mean, I know of, you know, there's situations in the States and throughout the world. So time to get on it, you know?
Exactly. And you know, a question I would have too for people who are listening and who are hearing about what you do with the fact that you help out at shelters and you've been involved in trying to help animals and you know, pass these animal cruelty laws. People who want to get involved in that, where do they start if they want to, you know, either spend time, you know, at a shelter for smaller animals or even if they want to help bigger animals too? Because I know there's problems with horses and all that kind of stuff too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you can, volunteering at a shelter is a great place to start. It will make you feel good to help animals, and you'll really get a sort of a grassroots feeling of how great adopting an animal can be. But I think at the root of it is we have to get laws changed. So if you know that animal cruelty laws are very lax in your province, in your city, wherever you are, then you have to go right to your local or provincial or federal government and go right to the source and campaign to have laws changed. And again, you can do that too at MontrealDogBlog.com for, you know, for the Montreal area. But for sure, contact your local Humane Society or SPCA and find out how you can work in tandem with them to get laws changed in your area.
And I know this is going to be a difficult question for you, but I want to put it out there because I know that you're passionate about animals and helping them out. If there's a person right now that's listening who is on the fence with regards to the fact that, you know, take any of the examples, they have an older animal that, you know, they don't want to deal with anymore, or they've gotten an animal and it's not right for them and they're thinking of abandoning it. What do you say to these people right now who are, you know, just on the verge of maybe doing something that they really shouldn't with regards to respecting animal life?
Some people have legitimate reasons for giving an animal up. I mean, I know that sometimes it's an extremely heart-wrenching situation for somebody to have to give up an animal, especially one that perhaps they've had for a number of years. So what I would say is that there are always places that are going to help you out. I mean, don't be a wuss and dump it on somebody's dump it on the doorstep of a rescue and run away. Don't just sell it to anybody for a quick buck. You know, don't abandon it. Don't leave it in your apartment when you move. Really try to find a home. And if you contact a local rescue agency in your town, they will help you. They will work with you to help find an appropriate home for that animal. Case in point, we had a 9-year-old dog that an owner was going to put down. And we posted that story on MontrealDogBlog.com and found a new home for this old guy to live out the rest of his years. So don't just say, if I can't have it, no one will have it, and decide to put the animal down. Please, if it's a healthy animal, if it has no issues, it deserves to live. You know, contact someone who will try their very best to help you out.
Nat, you're a rock star. Thank you so much for all of this. I really appreciate it.
No, thank you. It's an amazing forum to be able to be heard. And thanks, Kelly. Love you for it.
Anything for you, Nat Lauzon. That is media personality and animal advocate Nat Lauzon. Again, www.montrealdogblog.com.
Capture your need for sound.
Being in style is a very important thing for most women. It makes us feel good about ourselves and gives us a sense of confidence as we go about our day. The problem these days is that no matter what style of clothing you seem to wear, it can get pricey. Well, a wonderful alternative that is available to you comes courtesy of Tina O. She's a former runway model and current fashion designer that has taken her clothing business online. www.wannawearbytinao.com. Tina, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Well, good morning, Kelly Alexander. Morning, evening, whatever it is.
I appreciate that. Tina, first of all, you have to tell us how you went from being a runway model to a fashion designer.
Well, actually, I was always in fashion since I was a kid. So I kind of had my own style and never really followed fashion trends as much as I did love the miniskirt back from the 60s. I did dig that. But I really got a little, how would you say, disgruntled with the prices today. And I was always a connoisseur and coveter of couture. So I decided to buckle down, do some research, found a partner, designed a line, called it Wanna Wear, and 3 years later, here I am.
Wow. And Tina, why did you decide to go online? Like, wouldn't you want to have a physical in-store place for people to come to?
That sounds like a fun thing, but not in today's economy. In order for me to have the quality and the styles I have, if I had bricks and mortar, my dresses would average anywhere from $500 to $1,000. so I can keep my prices more affordable by having an online-only store.
And, you know, just the fact by saying that, you know, you're sort of located in Beverly Hills, I think a lot of people might feel that your clothing is like way out of budget for them. Can you explain to me, because I've read in the research, but I want you to tell everyone what you have in mind with regards to budget for your women clients.
Well, most of my average dress is around $180, but I start out at about $120. But I actually, I live on Rodeo Drive. So my business is actually out of my home. So if you're in the Los Angeles area, you can actually make an appointment. And I'm available from 1 until 7, Monday through Friday, or appointment only. Other than that, I'm open 24 hours a day. You can't beat that. And you just go to www.wannawearbytinao.com, and it's all there. I have about 300 pieces on the website right now. But in Beverly Hills, I am actually on the famous drive of Rodeo Drive. I'm kitty corner from, you know, Pretty Woman's favorite hotel, the Wilshire. So I'm conveniently located if you happen to be in the neighborhood.
That's amazing. And you mentioned that you have over 300 pieces online right now, Tina. What types of clothing are available for women?
Most of the pieces I do cater to the dress, but I do have a palazzo pant. I have fabulous jackets. I have things from the opera coat. And one of the things women seem to enjoy most is that a lot of my pieces are resurrected from anywhere from the 1930s, especially 40s and 50s. I dabble and do a two-step with the 1960s, and then I also have things that are for today. But I really do specialize in the dress. But what's wonderful about it is that I do honor the hourglass, and we celebrate the curve of a woman's figure. So I make sure I got a size 2, but I go all the way up to 22.
Oh, that's amazing. And, you know, I have to ask you, because it sounds like you're so, like you said earlier in the interview, that you followed couture for so long. Are your designs inspired by other designers?
Oh, absolutely. I would say my biggest inspiration would be Moret right now, Givenchy, Christian Dior, sprinkled with Chanel. And then everything that you see is reminiscent from a wiggle dress or a pencil silhouette, which was pretty much, I would say, invented or designed by the 1940s and 50s. Which came out of, you know, the cinched waist. There's nothing better than, you know, pulling in a little bit at the waist and letting the lines and the darting drip down the hips, down to the knee, or down to the calf of a lady's figure. Because she looks fabulous. There's nothing better than showing off that figure instead of hiding it.
Okay. And Tina, you know, because you are selling your clothing for a lesser price than the Ritzy stores, are you still, and I know that, you know, you're saving because of not having an actual physical store, but is your quality comparable to those Ritzy stores?
Oh, yeah. My clothing line would be that which you would find in either Saks or Neiman Marcus. It's not anything that you would find at, like, you know, your lower price stores. Not at all. Absolutely not. We actually hand finish. And for women who really feel that their sizes are unique, especially out here in Hollywood, mm-hmm. we ask for your measurements. We, you know, even though we do size 2 to 22 and we have a sizing chart, you have the option at no extra charge to just take the time, write down your measurements, and we will custom make it for your size.
That's amazing. And Tina, how do you do that? Because you said you like your store right now is where you live on Rodeo Drive. Where is all the production of it done? Like in your apartment or house or condo or?
Actually, no. I have a partner, Cynthia Lee, and we have about 23 gals that work for us, and they're in Arlington, Virginia.
Wow.
So even though I'm here and, you know, I'm doing the thing on the red carpet, and I've got several newscasters, you know, on Fox 11 News, Christine Devine, and I've got Wendy Birch with KTLA, which is like the morning show in Los Angeles, and quite a few celebrities that wear my clothing. Even Barbara Carrera, if you remember her, she was from James Bond, Never Say Never.
Mm-hmm.
I've got quite a few celebrities. A lot of playmates are wearing my clothes. because I have a lot of that pinup girl look too.
Okay.
So nope, it's all made in America, and it's just. But what's really nice is that if you're on the East Coast, you can get fitted there too.
That's amazing. So you really, I think that's actually just a great point to bring up is that, you know, for so many companies now, they outsource to other countries, but you're actually keeping the product in the States.
Yeah, the only thing we get outside of America, which of course is natural, are, you know, your fabrics. We do have, you know, your American-made cottons, you know, but we also do, because a lot of our fabrics are cotton viscose blend, but we also use a 5% spandex, which is very high. Most people only use 2 or 3%. So our clothing now is comfortable and soft, but it lifts and pulls up, pushes in, and keeps you looking good all day long.
That's amazing. And you mentioned earlier in the interview, but I kind of wanted to sort of reiterate that, I guess, is the fact that, you know, all over the world, we see all these skinny girls on magazine covers. But, you know, the reality is that a lot of women are not, you know, size zero. Was it a conscious choice for you to make sure that you cater to these women that are you know, the 10s, 11s, 12s, you know, up to 22, like you said?
Oh, yeah, because I'm a girl and all my, you know, and my girlfriends, I mean, I would have to say the average size woman, even, I mean, I'm in Los Angeles and, you know, I'm talking, we're all, you know, 8s, 10s, and 12s here. And because we all have figures and there's nothing better than a woman's figure. And so we need to celebrate it, embrace it. And, you know, when women wear my dresses down Wilshire or if it's down Main Street, I'll tell you, your girlfriends love it, but the men, oh my goodness, I've had more men stop me on the street, ask for my card so they could order one for their wife. So they love it. And there's nothing better than looking like a woman.
Joining us on the show this week is fashion designer Tina O. Check her out, www.wannawearbytinao.com. Tina, what's next for you, I guess? Like, I, you know, in the research that I've done, it sounds like your company is growing. And is there other avenues that you want to pursue, or do you just want to stay with the online and take it as far as you can there?
Well, no, I'm hoping that, you know, eventually I'll have a very small little retail boutique. But what I'm looking at right now is, you know, it's one thing to celebrate the curve. It's the other thing is the healthy lifestyle, especially for the women over 40. I was just asked, by the way, because of my fashion lines, et cetera, and the average size girl that's on this particular dance line with it's the WNBA Women's National Basketball Association or whatever that is. I'm not so good on that.
the women's
anyway,
basketball association.
It's the Sparks, and
yes.
They have a dance line, and
oh, cool.
I've just been asked to be on that. But what I'm looking at right now is a healthy lifestyle, and I'm looking at taking WannaWear and doing, you know, like I'm looking at doing a shampoo and conditioner for women over 40, et cetera, because one of the things that we don't have a lot of options for is the all natural ingredients that actually accelerate and again help with the growth and the maintenance of hair. So there's one thing to, you know, celebrate the woman's body, it's another thing to take care of it. So I am looking at that right now, as a matter of fact, and working on that.
And Tina, I guess a final question for you, because right now, you know, we're doing the interview and it's going to be for my online show. What words of advice do you have for other would-be entrepreneurs who want to start their own online adventure? Because I'm doing it, you're doing it. What do you say to them, to these people, you know, to people who want to do what we're doing?
You know, I have to honestly say, because I've done it, is it's persistence is the key. And it's just don't ever give up. And on your worst day, it's still going to be your best day looking back, because you never gave up and you just went forward. And eventually, you know, you see the light at the end of the tunnel, and it does happen. It happens if you make it happen.
Tina, you've been fantastic. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
That's fashion designer Tina O. Again, make sure to check her out, www.wannawearbytinao.com.
KellyAlexanderShow.com.
Well, some very sad news coming out of Hollywood recently, as the amazingly talented actor Leslie Nielsen has passed away after a bout with pneumonia at the age of 84. Leslie accomplished a lot in his life, including having a stint in the Royal Canadian Air Force, as well as being a radio DJ before heading over to acting. And once he did head over to the acting community, he racked up numerous television and film roles, including his very successful turn in Airplane, as well as the Naked Gun series. Leslie picked up a ton of awards as well, including being inducted into the Canadian as well as the Hollywood Walk of Fame. he just was so funny to watch. And if you were in a bad mood, the best way to get out of it was to put in a Leslie Nielsen movie. So I think the best way to pay homage to him right now is to play the man himself. So take a listen right here to Leslie Nielsen on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Hey, who are you?
I'm Lieutenant Frank Drebin, police squad. And don't ever let me catch you guys in America.
Frank.
Sure, you think I'm a big hero, the man of the hour. Well, do any of you understand how a man can hurt inside?
Frank, they're not here for you. Weird Al Yankovic is on the plane.
Wilma, I promise you, whatever scum did this, not one man on this force will rest for 1 minute until he's behind bars. Now let's grab a bite to eat.
Yeah, come on, Wilma.
You'd better tell the captain we've got to land as soon as we can. This woman has to be gotten to a hospital.
A hospital? What is it?
It's a big building with patients, but that's not important right now. Tell the captain I must speak to him.
Certainly.
Captain, how soon can you land?
I can't tell.
You can tell me I'm a doctor.
No, I mean, I'm just not sure.
Or can't you take a guess?
Well, not for another 2 hours.
You can't take a guess for another 2 hours?
No. I mean, we can't land for another 2 hours.
What was it we had for dinner tonight?
Well, we had a choice, steak, fish.
Yes, I remember I had lasagna.
How about dinner? I know this little out-of-the-way place that serves great Viking food.
That's quite a tempting offer, Lieutenant. But I'm afraid I'm going to have to get my rest this evening, tomorrow being Arbor Day and all.
Of course. Well, perhaps some other time.
How about a rain check?
Well, let's just stick to dinner.
Can you fly this plane and land it?
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Let go of that fellow!
Why was the I Love You not listed in Ludwig's records? And if it was, did he know about it? And if he didn't, who did? And where the hell was I?
I don't want any more trouble like you had last year on the South Side. Understand? That's my policy.
Yes, well, when I see five weirdos dressed in togas stabbing a guy in the middle of the park in full view of 100 people, I shoot the bastards. That's my policy.
That was a Shakespeare in the Park production of Julius Caesar, you moron. You killed five actors.
Surely there must be something you can do.
I'm doing everything I can. And stop calling me Shirley.
I'm a very lucky woman.
So am I.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
I am so excited, actually, to introduce you to someone who's very special in my life. I know you've already met the amazing and wonderful Mummy Alexander, and I thought it would be cool. It's about time. We've been, broadcasting the Kelly Alexander Show for over a year now, and I thought it would be very interesting if you finally met my grandma, Grandma Alexander. And it's a great pleasure to have her on the show this week because, first of all, I think she's a very knowledgeable woman just about pretty much everything. So I'm anxious for you to meet her and see what she's all about. And the reason I want to also have her on the show this week is to talk about something that she's done from as long as I've been alive and well before that. And that's the fact that she plays our organ at our little church, our little white church on the hill. And I thought it would be interesting to talk to her about everything that she went through to sort of learn how to play the organ and the piano, and that she's been, playing in the church for so many years. So I'm going to introduce you first to my grandma, and then we're going to talk about basically her career as an organist in our church, and we're going to find all about that interesting stuff that she does, because it's a lot of work to be the organist for all these years and to keep the hymns fresh and interesting to all of us in the congregation. So without further ado, welcome Grandma Alexander to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi.
Grandma, I'm so happy to have you on the show. First of all, you're my grandma. I love you to bits. And I guess the first question that I wanted to ask you was, how old were you when you took up the piano and the organ? And also, I guess my second question is, I remember you telling me that you had to learn how to play all on your own.
Yes, I first started playing in the church when I was 12 years old. But I took it over completely when I was for the last 65 years. Before that, we had another organist for a little while. But that's when I started.
And Grandma, how did you learn to play the piano and the organ? Because as far as I remember you telling me, you didn't have a teacher.
No, As a young girl, I played by ear. I didn't play by note. And for years, I played that way. Even when I started playing in the church, I did that. But then, with the choir and everything, they wanted new selections. So I took it on to learn the notes and to be able to direct the choir that way. So it was a bit of a challenge because at that time I had three little children and I had to get out to church every Sunday morning.
And Grandma, actually, with regards to learning how to play, like you said, you played by ear, but when you had to start learning the notes and reading music, how did that happen?
I actually got a course from the States, written different lessons, giving you pointers on how to get going. So that's the way I learned my notes from this school of music on my own. And then from there, I was able to continue.
And Grandma, I can only imagine, because I don't play an instrument. Well, I used to play the drums, and I can, you know, do some things on the keyboard by ear, and maybe I got that from you. But I can imagine sort of learning how to play the piano and with learning notes without having a teacher. It must have been very difficult to sort of figure out notes and timing all on your own with just books in front of you.
It was quite a challenge, but I had one person that used to come to our house sometimes, and when I was in a great deal of difficulty, I would ask her, "What's wrong here? Why am I not getting this?" And she would give me pointers.
And Grandma, with regards to you playing in the church, like you said, you've been doing it, well, I guess full-time for 65 years now, you said. Whose idea was it for you to even start at 12 to start helping out in the church? Like, who asked you to do that?
It was the organist that we had at that time. She was my cousin, and she was getting up in years, and she said, I'm just finding it too hard to play all the time. She said, we need to have somebody younger come in and start getting accustomed to playing in church. So I was brave enough to take up the challenge.
Did you have any idea, Grandma, at the time, because I know you were quite young there at 12, did you have any thoughts that it would turn into this, you know, 65-year career and more and longer even?
Mm-hmm. No, I certainly didn't. For years I told them that I was a temporary organist, that we were waiting for the real organist to come and take over, but the real organist never appeared on our doorstep volunteering.
That's funny, Grandma. And I guess, you know, after all these years of, you know, playing at the church, do you still find it inspirational to be doing it now, Grandma?
Yes, I do. Because it means a lot to me, and the hymns and things that I've sung ever since I was a young girl. Because when I first started playing, I sang as well as played all the time. When I got older, I found it a little bit too much. But yes, I do find it inspirational, and trying to go with the seasons. Like right now, I just told you that I have music all over the table for Christmas, and that's what I'm zeroing in on now. To Advent starts on the 28th, and the music for Advent, the music for Christmas, and that I find very inspiring, because I've all the years that I've played it, and still I love the Christmas music.
And how hard is it, Grandma, or I guess maybe not the word is not hard, but just challenging, or even just enjoyably challenging each and every week to sort of find the selections that we're going to play? Because as far as I know, you make all the decisions with regards to the music that we're going to sing at church. I don't think the minister has much to do with it. It's all you, right, Grandma?
That's right. I go with whatever seasons we're in as much as possible, because you have all the different times of the church: Easter, Christmas, Lent, Advent, all these different special times in the church. And I go with those hymns that go with the season we're in.
And Grandma, just as you were talking, a question that came to my mind was the fact that, you know, you've had, you know, you play, you know, throughout the year at the church. And obviously over the years, you've had to play at both sort of joyous occasions, whether it's a, you know, a wedding or a baptism, but also you've had to perform at funerals. How difficult is it for you when you have to play, you know, over the years when you've had to play at a funeral?
I found it at the beginning terrible, difficult. I said to my father, I said, I don't think I can play at a funeral because I just am too emotional. Well, he said, think of it this way. It's the last thing you can do for somebody. And so that gave me the courage to go ahead and do it, because what when he said that, I thought, he's right. I'll never get a chance to do something for this person again, so I will go and do the best I can. And God has helped me.
That's amazing, Grandma. And that's that was really smart that your father told you to think of it like that, because it is the last thing that you can do, and it obviously helped you get through it. And you know, back to sort of joyous occasions like weddings and so on. Is it fun to do weddings and stuff? Like, when I know we don't do them as much anymore, but when you used to do more weddings, was it fun working with the wedding party and the bride to sort of figure out what you were going to play?
Yes, the rehearsals are really the best part of it, because we're all kind of relaxed. We know what the next day we're going to have to be on our best behavior. But at the rehearsals, there's always... I like that part of it.
That's awesome. And Grandma, actually, I guess I have to ask you, because you've played now for so long as the lead organist at the church, 65 years, and I've only been alive for about 30 of them. Can you tell us sometimes, like, where maybe things didn't go well? Did you ever have something that didn't happen or went wrong, but you had to sort of barrel through it anyway?
Well, sometimes the electricity has gone off and the organ has gone off at the same time, which is always a little bit... shakes a person up a bit, but apart from that, it's gone pretty smoothly.
And I have to ask you too, Grandma, because you know, I used to sing in the choir quite a bit when I was younger, and what was it like working, because, like, you know, when I was little, I guess, you know, I'm little and I didn't really think too much about it, but what was it like working with all of us young kids who were, you know, trying to get up there and sing a song, and you were trying to get us to do it?
Oh, it was fantastic. I loved that part. I loved Christmas time when the young people were performing. And just as I told you a few minutes ago, the solo, after you hadn't been well, you came to church and you sang this beautiful solo, A Blanket of White for Christmas Tonight. And that song is always in my mind, your song, because... you were just recovering, and you got up in church and you sang this solo as beautifully as can be. And all the young people, they all put their whole heart in it. Just as you remember, you used to do Little Drummer Boy. And now I'm hoping that I have a great-granddaughter that'll take over and do Little Drummer Boy for me too.
That's awesome. And speaking of the you know, the Christmas time, we used to have two services, the Christmas Eve service, and then we used to have the candlelight, which was such a big sort of production to put on. Can you tell us about that? Because that service was you know, over an hour long usually, and there was so much music involved in that with all of us at the choir. Was it? Because again, I was in the choir, and sometimes I think I took for granted how much work you and Aunt Joyce have to do, who's like the I guess the choir director in a way. Was it difficult for you guys? Because we would often have themes as well, depending on which Christmas year it was. Was it, you know, what was, I guess, the most challenging part about putting that service on, the candlelight service?
Because the most challenging was that it was always new music, and it took quite a bit of practice and study. It didn't come as easy as some people think it does. Some people think you just sit down and play, and that is okay with some people. They can do it, but I had to practice the new music a lot. But the choir came forth and always gave their best, and everybody liked that service because it was all music.
And did you enjoy it, Grandma? Because we used to, I guess, rehearse for probably more than a month in advance. Did you enjoy the rehearsals the most, or did you actually enjoy the night that we actually put it on, or were you so focused on the night that you couldn't even sort of enjoy it as much as just being in rehearsal?
I really was trying so hard to be sure that I didn't miss any points that I should during the whole service, that you're kind of in an attention until it's all over, and then you're hopefully you're pleased with everything and it's worth it, all the work. But it is a lot of work for me it was a lot of work, because it was all music that I had never heard before, and so I really had to work at it. But fortunately, my husband didn't mind listening to all the practicing, because the house rang with practicing for a month before the services.
That's awesome, Grandma. Thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Kelly.
Bring on the remix.
That's Katy Perry with Firework, the Glamour Services Brazil mix, right here on The Kelly Alexander Show. Well, that pretty much does it for the show this week. A big thank you going out to our fantastic guests, Nat Lozon, Tina O, and the one and only Grandma Alexander. I'm really happy that you finally got to meet her. I also want to give a shout out to our new friends at PCJ Media in Taiwan for bringing us on board, as well as our continued friendship with In Retro Radio right here in Canada. We really appreciate your support. So again, that pretty much does it for me this week. I always appreciate any comments or questions. Kelly at KellyAlexanderShow.com. Have a great week, and you and I will chat soon.
The Kelly Alexander Show is hosted by Kelly Alexander. Produced by Esteban Vargas, Barbara Purcell, Chris Paré, and Kelly Alexander. Original themes and production music composed by Ian Campbell. Thanks for listening.
We would very much appreciate your comments and questions about our programming here at PCJ Radio. You can contact us via email at pcjradio@gmail.com. Once again, that's pcjmedia@gmail.com. We also invite you to visit our website, www.pcjmedia.com, and listen to all our programs. You can either download them from the website directly or subscribe to all our programs in iTunes at www.pcjmedia.com. And while you're at our website, do take part in the Happy Station Show Friendship Sponsorship Program. There are three levels: silver for $1, gold for $5, and platinum for $10. The selection is yours. This is PCJ Radio.
Hi, I'm Peter Anthony Holder, and I would like you to join me for a very eclectic and different kind of radio show. It's called the Stuff File Program. Where else would you get to hear a well-renowned Hollywood acting teacher, a best-selling science fiction writer, a guy who teaches llamas how to be golf caddies, or the man who has Hitler's toilet, all wrapped up with some of the oddest news stories around? It's a rhetorical question. There's only one place: the Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. There are various ways to catch the show. You can find it at my website at peteranthonyholder.com. Check out my blog at peteranthonyholder.blogspot.com. Find it at cyberstationusa.com, radioforall.net, or simply subscribe to it on iTunes. You've forgotten all those places already, haven't you? Okay, just Google the title. It's called the Stuff File Program, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. Catch it, enjoy it, and have a chuckle or two. The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Radio will never be the same again.
Thank you. this is Bob Zanotti. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, SwitzerlandInSound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs, SwitzerlandInSound.com, where English language radio from Switzerland lives on.